So as you know, or if not, I will tell you, this morning carried the news that George Mitchell, who was the United States envoy to bring peace in the Middle East, has been brought back to the United States, saying that it doesn't look like significant talks can start anytime soon. And the reason that he was chosen for this task is because he was successful in talks in Northern Ireland. And so people thought that perhaps the same set of skills that he brought to Northern Ireland would help in the Middle East. But Northern Ireland is child's play compared to the Middle East. For lots and lots of reasons. But one thing that I do remember that the Irish have in common with the Jews, there are actually several things that the Irish have in common with the Jews, but one thing that they have in common with the Jews is they have a wonderful legacy of literature and of words. The greatest Irish writer of the 20th century, James Joyce, wrote his most famous book, Ulysses, about a Jewish character. And their greatest poet, Yeats, reflecting on the troubles in Northern Ireland, wrote, "Too long a sacrifice makes a stone of the heart." He looked around him and he saw that people who had sacrificed again and again and again, they finally grew hard, they grew callous, they lost their compassion. And that's something else that's different. Because the Jewish heart has not been turned to stone. The price that you pay for not allowing your heart to be turned to stone is that you get wounded again and again and again. As long as you leave yourself open to hope or to possibility, you leave yourself open again and again to be crushed. And each time there is a new hope, in Israel, in the United States, we can't help it. We get excited again. Maybe this time it'll work. Because we refuse to turn our hearts to stone. And one of the reasons that we do, one of the reasons that we keep, sometimes in the face of all reason, hoping and trying, is because we remember the antiquity of the dream on which the modern state of Israel is built. I mean, after all, in the Bible, early on, nobody said we need a state because there's anti-Semitism in the world. That wasn't the dream of the state of Israel. It was the necessity in the modern world, but it wasn't the dream. The dream was that if we had our own land, we could do extraordinary things. In fact, this is my own private theory about why the Jews are so accomplished. I don't think we're genetically smarter than other people. Okay, a little. But I heard the English writer and scientist Matt Ridley give a whole speech about how it doesn't matter how smart an individual is. If you get 10 dumb people together, they will solve a problem better than one smart person. He said networks of people do remarkable things, and all the great achievements of modern society, technology and so on, they're all in some ways built with synergy. One of the examples that he gave was a gastroenterologist had a discussion just out of nowhere with somebody who built telescopes and lasers, and as a result, they developed this pill, this camera pill that you can take, and it will show your insides through a camera. He said, but had those two people not had this synergy, such a thing never would have happened. And I think because Judaism is so communal, we were always talking to each other. We were always in conversation. The synergy constantly built because Jews never kept quiet. And so people from different parts of the community were in constant touch with each other, and more and better things developed. And if we had our own country, you would discover all of a sudden that would have per capita more startups than any other country in the world, and per capita more Nobel Prize winners than any other country in the world, and per capita more books read by each individual than any other country in the world, because that's what we do. That was the dream. The dream wasn't, let's have a place where we can be safe. That's an ignoble dream for a noble people. It was, let's have a place where we can be safe so that we can do remarkable things. That's what we wanted Israel for. That's what we want Israel for. It's true that sometimes we look to the world and we say, can't you just treat us like you treat everybody else, just normally? But that doesn't mean that we want to be a normal people or have a normal country. We just want the normal modes of civility and conduct and understanding that every other nation gets. But we want to try to do something special. And we do, day after day, year after year. Because one of the tragedies of the state is that when people look at it or think about it, they think of the matzav, of the situation, as though Israel were composed entirely of its relationship with its neighbors, and not of people who dream and build and send their children to school and create and learn and teach. That's one of the reasons why this year we're taking the synagogue and the city of Los Angeles on a trip to Israel, and I hope that you will join with me on that trip at the end of October and beginning of November, to see the land in all its colors, to see the extraordinary thing that our brothers and sisters have built in that ancient land. The safety's important. The safety's crucial. Coming out of the years of the Shoah, I think often of the story that Danny Gordis told me. He said, you know, when I grew up, as is still true, when we would do the Yizkor prayers, everybody who wasn't saying Yizkor would leave, and the rabbis would always get upset because they would say, you don't actually have to leave during Yizkor, you can stay, but still, superstitiously, everyone would leave. So he was praying in his shul in Israel, which has mostly a younger crowd. And it came time for the Yizkor prayer, and all the younger people left, and he was getting upset because he'd been trained that you shouldn't actually leave. It's just a superstition. And an old man, a survivor, standing next to him, said, don't be upset. He said, I remember when this synagogue started and nobody left. Israel began as a land where everyone was saying Yizkor all the time. Yes, it's important that there's a place to be safe. But remember, what we're defending is not a refuge. It's a fountain. It's a place where things flow and blossom and grow that we can be proud of and love. It's not a walled camp. It's an open and vibrant and brilliant and accomplished and promising society, that somehow our people have been able to build in an island of intolerance. We have sacrificed longer than any other people, but it has not made our heart into stone. So we should be grateful. We should bless God and one another, not only for everything we have and for everything we've done, but for everything that we will do. Because we haven't had a state for that long. And all of the accomplishments of the past, they are all a prelude. At the urging of Hallie Lehrman, I picked up this book about Israel's prime ministers by Yehuda Avner. And in it, he quotes a beautiful letter by Esther Kallengold, who fought in the War of Independence. And she writes at home, and she knows, you can tell from the letter, that she's going to die. And she says to her parents, "I know that you're going to mourn, but I wish you wouldn't. Because life isn't only measured by its duration, it's also measured by what you do. And I'm doing the most wonderful thing I could do. And I know for a fact that God will grant us our land. And that one day, Jerusalem will be the place where Jews will gather. And it doesn't matter if I die. Because I'm dying for a dream I know will come true." And you finish this letter and you can't help but be moved. And then after, Yehuda Avner says, "And she died in the battle in 1948. And this letter touches me because I'm married to her sister. And her brother, whom she also mentions in the letter, became one of my closest friends." And you realize too long a sacrifice has only softened our hearts, made us grateful, helped us bless God, and prepared us, sadly, for sacrifices and certainly for achievements in the many, many, many years that Israel has to come. Shabbat Shalom.